Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
That voice that you're hearing, that's none other than the infamous Casey Sherman, actually Marshfield resident, a guy who, my goodness, I've got like four pieces of paper here with all the things that you do. What, best-selling author, journalist, guest analyst on many TV shows, radio show. You were on the radio yesterday in Worcester. I mean, you get there's a movie coming out that we're gonna talk about, the finest hours,
right?
You're in the works for a script for Turk.
Yep, Derek Sanderson, his life story that we're gonna be bringing to Hollywood as well. So
how awesome is that? And then Mark Wahlberg is in this mix for Boston Strong.
Boston Strong, he'll be starring.
Joe,
when
do we start, Joe?
I don't know. There's a lot to cover.
See, you're useless. I'm kidding. Let's first start off with the latest news, and that is in regards to The Finest Hours, the book. I guess a school here in Massachusetts, another school.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, Marshfield, the Furnace Brook Middle School here in Marshfield, recently selected The Finest Hours for its One School, One Book program. And tonight I was alerted via Twitter, social media, that another school in Franklin, the Horace Mann Middle School, has also selected the book to read, you know, school-wide, which is amazing. And I think that is the greatest compliment as an author, especially for our young readers' version of The Finest Hours. There are two versions of it, and you know, the young kids seem to be gravitating toward this story of courage and self-sacrifice. So you know, the more the merrier, and I'll show up at any school in America that does the same thing, because it really gets kids to read, gets kids to think about heroes in their own community. So I'm very happy to be on that mission with them.
We'll talk more about The Finest Hours and talk about the movie hitting the screens just next month. But let's first talk about, you are just getting back from a trip that you took to Paris and doing something in regards to the attacks that took place over there, and somehow connecting it from what happened 9/11 here. You were asked by Fox News to do a special report, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I was on assignment for Fox News, and really I was traveling with a group of families that had lost loved ones on 9/11 on flight United 93, the so-called hero flight, where the passengers took control of the cockpit from the hijackers and brought it into the ground. Now, there's a great company out of Boston called Vantage Deluxe World Travel. They created this heroes program a couple of years back. Dave Wedge and I talked about our trip to France with the survivors of the Boston Marathon bomb.
Right.
So this company, this travel company, has been spending millions of dollars on their own dime for the past several years, bringing you know, victims and survivors of tragedy together on these really unique healing cruises. So this trip was already in the works via Vantage Travel and their Heroes program, and then the Paris terrorist attacks hit. And we didn't know if these families were going to back away because of all the, you know, the State Department travel alerts that were out there, and some did. But others were more resolute than ever to stand up and stand by the people of Paris. So when we got to Paris, the original crew trip was going to be in Paris a couple of days and then travel up this River Seine to Normandy for a couple of days. And we did that as well. But to be in Paris and to visit the site, which is really the ground zero of the Paris terrorist attacks, where 90 of 130 people were killed. We're talking about the Bataclan Music Hall. And it was just such an emotional feeling to be down there and to see people who were showing up at this memorial for the first time, Parisians, who must have lost loved ones because their tears were just covering their jackets and their shirts. They were openly weeping in public. When we told them who we were, there was this incredible bond that was formed. And so you had the United 93 families talking about their loss. I was bringing the Boston perspective into it, because it was very similar to the memorial that we saw at Copley Square, where people were just going down there and, you know, showing their love and showing their faith to the people that they lost. So that was a very important and very emotional trip that I took. Wrote about it for Fox News. If anybody wants to learn more about this program, just go to vantageheroes.com. It talks all about the way, reason why this company does it and some of the trips that they're planning in the future. It's pretty amazing to be a part of it.
What was it like, you just being there, ground zero in Paris, at the site of where this happened?
It was eerie, because the streets of Paris were bare. We were driving by, cafe after cafe after cafe.
Not festive like it usually is,
right? Not festive like it usually is, especially because it was very warm out. So you think that the Parisians would be taking to the streets, the outdoor cafes. That's a birthright in Paris. These things were basically empty. There were still people walking the streets, but their heads were on a swivel. You could feel the intensity and the amount of extra police patrols. Now, it was really weird, guys, that when we got down there and we rented a van and we delivered this beautiful wreath to the Bataclan, as we get to the area of the Bataclan, all the streets are cordoned off, and we were wondering what was going on. Well, just so happens that at the approximate time that we had arrived, the UN Secretary General, who was in Paris for the climate talks, and the mayor of Paris, they were arriving at the same time and delivering flowers to the site as well. Somehow our van gets put into the middle of the perimeter, where all the security is, and we're just trying to explain who we are in very broken French. And we were allowed to stay within, 5 feet of these dignitaries, which was probably breaking security protocol.
That's huge.
Oh, it's very huge. I'm sure, my picture is being analyzed by,
guy looks sketchy.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah, Interpol right now. But it was very emotional to be that close, to see that, and then to have our own quiet moments there, and to see the Parisians coming together and openly weeping and praying for their loved ones. I'll never forget it.
A lot of the pictures you post, you've posted it very vivid, and you kind of get a sense, kind of live vicariously through you as to what you're seeing. Very nice job as far as
thank you
your
very
photography
much.
And trying to, let's capture the moment as you're living it. It's very
as journalists, guys, we write, we speak, but we also have that visual
circle. Yep.
Yeah. So you find that one moment, and a photograph, as they say, can say 1,000 words, and many times they do.
Good, Joe.
I was going to shift gears just a little bit. I don't know if you want to finish with this.
Well, I want to make sure that you...
Sure.
I thought it was kind of a big story as far as going over there and covering this thing.
Oh, sure.
Is this something that you feel that is going to be... You're going to have further work on yourself?
I don't think so. I think this was a moment in time that, we showed the solidarity.
It was a snapshot.
It was a snapshot. I felt, strongly, because I was a little nervous about traveling over to Paris as well.
Be.
But, once those United 93 families were, as I said, more resolute than ever to show that solidarity, because the Parisians need it more than ever. Remember after the Boston bombing attacks, well, tourism went down in Boston, and we were hit economically as well. Same thing is happening in Paris right now, and this is a global war, and we're all in it, so we all have to support each other.
Yeah, you look at what's going on. I mean, give us your perspective. I mean, again, somebody who is, you have a belt under your book as far as writing about a terrorist act that took place here in Boston. We saw it happen after Paris. In San Bernardino. Give me your thoughts on what is going on here worldwide. Is this just something that we have to deal with and live with?
Oh, I think so, unfortunately. And again, it's something we have to deal with, but how we deal with it is going to be the question. I mean, there are so many different avenues to go down, whether it's tightening gun laws, etc., which I'm all for, and I know that goes back and forth in terms of, the way I think of it, guys, is I am 100% in favor of people owning guns and with the right to bear arms, whether they're pistols, etc., but nobody should be owning a personalized weapon of mass destruction, which are these AK-47s, these Bushmasters. Guys, we're talking, tonight is the third anniversary of Newtown.
Right.
And nothing has changed. Shandy it's Hook, only right. gotten worse. 26 kids die, 7 to 6 years old, and nothing is changing here. And now, I send my kids to school every day, and I'm worried. So as a parent, I feel strongly about this.
I feel the same way, and it seems as though we're more, these days, living more in fear then we are trying to find a solution and find a way for us to. I mean, you have it's gone to the level of presidential politics where
sure.
you have one candidate saying that he wants to, you know, write for the, if he is elected, that he will not let Muslims enter the country. I mean, we've gotten to that point in our lives where we're talking about not allowing people to
not being an American.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it's part of our culture.
It's part of our culture. However, you know, I mean, we have to be a lot smarter about, you know, some of the certain people we let in. There's been a debate within the FBI and the State Department about social media. Now, the woman that was, the wife of the terror wife, we should call her, she made no qualms about railing against America and really being a pro-ISIS kind of fanatic on her social media channels. They were never checked when she came over as the new wife of this
from Palestine.
Yeah, exactly. Palestine via Egypt. So
right.
We just have to be smart. We have to be vigilant. One of the reasons why Dave Wedge and I wrote Boston Strong was not to talk about the fear that it created, but really the need to track those terrorists down. And that's what Boston Strong the book is about. That's what Boston Strong the movie is going to be about. It's going to be about cops on the ground hunting these men down, just as vigilant as anybody.
Yeah, because
the perfect segue.
Well, and that seems to be, you look at San Bernardino, I mean, it was local police who were the first people on the lines. It wasn't the FBI, it wasn't the military that ended up being front line.
Right.
So I think that's a perfect example of almost the movement we've seen in those types of attacks are away from these large things where you bring military and FBI in, where it's just the local cops that are stopping all this stuff from
happening. And the local cops will always be the first responders at any of these, you know, suburban or small city attacks, or
sure.
even a city like Boston. You know, it's the boots on the ground, law enforcement officers, and just volunteers and ordinary citizen soldiers who go out there. They first protect the wounded, save the people that they need to save, then they hunt the people that are responsible.
How about catching the eye of a Boston-based guy who is, he's a big name in Hollywood, Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, I mean, Mark Wahlberg is, this is a role that he was born to play. He plays Danny Keeler. Danny Keeler is a former homicide detective from the Boston Police Department who was put in command of the Boston Marathon before the bombs went off. And it was almost a punishment for Danny because Danny had a very controversial career. He was called or nicknamed Mr. Homicide during the early part of his career because he was closing cases that nobody else could close at a record pace. He was a very, you know, he's the Dirty Harry of Boston is who he is. And, when these prosecutors couldn't fully prosecute some of the bad guys in some of these neighborhoods that nobody cared about, well, Danny made sure that they went to jail for whatever reason. He was he was playing fast and loose with the facts in some respect. However, the Boston police, they couldn't fire Danny because he was such a good cop and he was a hero to his fellow police officers, and he is today. But they put him in charge of special events in the city of Boston, which is kind of a demotion from being this homicide whiz that he was. But here he is at the Boston Marathon. He's in charge of special events. So when those bombs go off, he is in command, and he makes the decision that ultimately ended up, finding these terrorists. And that was get every cell phone camera, get every surveillance camera you can, because our guys are on it.
How do you feel about a guy like that wanting to be a part of that? I mean, does that tell me? I mean, to feel those emotions, to get an email or get a phone call going, hey, you'll never guess who wants to, you know, invest his time, his money, his energy into something that you spent, you know,
sure.
the same thing.
Into. Well, it's interesting. You know, I mean, I've always been a fan of Wahlberg's work. I think this is a role that, as I said, you know, could earn him an Oscar nomination because the script is so rich and it's such a three-dimensional character. And then you bring in the director, Peter Berg, who directed Lone Survivor, who I've always been a big fan on. In fact, you know, Dave Wedge and I, we threw his name out originally when we first started to talk about a potential movie based on our book. So I think that, you know, it is a perfect storm in terms of bringing the right people together for an important project like this. And it's now more important than ever for people around the world to know that, you know, law enforcement's not going to give up. They're going to hunt you down no matter what it takes. And they certainly do that in the pages and then the screenplay of Boston Strong.
Got a favorite Wahlberg movie?
Favorite Wahlberg movie. Three Kings I liked a lot. That was one of his earlier David O. Russell roles, and he's just a young soldier in Iraq at the time. So, I think he's pretty good.
Joe, you got a favorite Wahlberg movie?
I'd have to think about that.
Do you want to draw a picture so you know who he is?
Stop.
God. I liked him in Shooter.
Shooter,
I think of Shooter immediately when you had mentioned him in that role. I wonder if it would be something similar like that. The Departed, he was fantastic in The Departed.
Fighter as well.
The Fighter was
Mickey Ward.
He should have won an award for that.
Well, people always talked about how understated he was as a character. That's Mickey.
Yeah.
You know, Mickey's an understated person, so he played the role perfectly.
And if you're a sports fan, Invincible.
Yeah, that's the Vinny Papali is that
fantastic in Invincible. I think that was an underrated movie.
I think so too. And hey, he could also play Derek Sanderson. Who knows? You know, we'll see. I hope he can skate.
What led you to wanting to write the screenplay or to put the script together for?
Well, the producers of Turk I've known for a while. I'm friendly with Bobby Orr, and all of a sudden the synergy was that, well, Casey Sherman is a Boston guy. They'd had a director and a screenwriter try to work on the script in the past, but these were, you know, Hollywood guys. They had never been to Boston. They didn't know hockey. They didn't know the Big Bad Bruins, and you lost that sense of the story when reading that script. It was very dour. It was very maudlin, and there are certainly parts of Derek's life that are that, but overall it's a wild, fun, crazy story with an upside and a downside and also a redemption side as well. So that's what I'm trying to capture in the script that I'm writing currently.
Now, have you had any one-on-one conversations with Derek?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. And it's been eye-opening because there are stories that he can still tell that, you know, probably nobody else knows. And those are the stories that I'm kind of cherry-picking right now to, put together in this story, because I think it's fascinating and it is not your traditional sports biopic. It's anything but that. It's really, you know, the Wolf of Wall Street meets Slapshot is what it is. So.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah, that does sound
cool. Very interesting. Now, I myself don't recall watching Derek play during the Big Bet, but I remember him as being the color analyst.
Sure, me too.
And him being the guy who, you know, kind of, you just his hockey sense and his hockey mind as a guy is vital. So it'll be interesting to see how you were able to put this together.
And it's his relationship with Bobby Orr who basically saved his life. That brotherhood that, you know, was bound on skates, and then obviously the relationship they created with each other off the ice. That's the heart of the story. So you do have these wild antics that we, you know, show the audience, but at its heart, it's a love story of between two brothers, the greatest hockey player that ever lived and his best friend.
Where does the script stand right now? How far into it are you at the moment?
Yeah, I'm in screenwriting terms, I'm in the second act and heading into home right now, but it's really writing itself. It's a pleasure to be involved in it, and I can't wait to get it finished, and it'll be finished about the same time that The Finest Hours hits the screen next month.
Wow. Mm. Now, when do you see a possible production? Is it a matter of the script being approved?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, it's a whole, you know,
folks who don't know what it goes
through. Absolutely. No, I agree. I was a novice, and now I consider myself something of a, not an expert, but I learn different things about Hollywood every day. It's really core to the development of any film to get the script right. It has to be on the page before it will ever be on the screen. Right. Some people, you know, cross hurdles and don't check off that check mark on the list to get the script right, and those movies are always garbage. We want the script to be 100% so that the studios are attracted to it, and most importantly, we get an actor that is, you know, A caliber, not somebody that's just looking for a job.
Good to know. Joe, did you have a question before I leave the subject?
No. What subject were you going to move to?
I think what we do is it's time for dessert.
Where are we going now, guys?
It's dessert. It's time to talk about The Finest Hours.
Right. That's what I was going to break into.
Oh, well, you go right ahead. Segue away.
I was just going to talk about...
We're talking with Casey Sherman, who is an author, and as we've heard, he's writing the script for Turk. And now we're going to talk a little bit about The Finest Hours, a book that he co-authored that is now going to be in the theaters come January 29th.
January 29th. And, you know, now the previews are already starting to
Fantastic.
Be shown on television. You know, they aired it during the Army-Navy game on Saturday. And it's just great to see. And it's great to share that with my friends. And it's great to also see some of the people you don't know get excited about this movie just based on, you know, the themes. You know, I think it's going to, I hope that it taps into a vein in the American culture and culture worldwide, because this opens up in 80 countries around the world. It's a universal theme about courage under fire, about self-sacrifice, about saving lives, not taking lives, but saving lives. Mm. You know, there's not a curse word in this movie. You can take your grandson to this film. You can also take your grandmother. But it's incredibly dramatic. It's adventurous. It's funny in certain spots as well. My two young girls have big crushes on the lead actor, Chris Pine. So,
modern-day Captain Kirk.
Yeah, modern-day Captain Kirk, right. But I'm really excited about it. I'm so proud of the production and the fact that we're able to shoot it locally where it happened in this New England community has just been amazing.
Chris Pine is a heck of an actor. And let's not forget, you have an Affleck in this movie.
We do, Casey Affleck.
Casey Affleck.
And he's great. He's
phenomenal.
Yeah. You know, he's a real actor. He's an actor's actor. And he dug himself right into the role of this engine man who was actually, he was a very minor officer on the SS Pendleton. It's the ship that splits in two in the book and the film. And all of a sudden, all of the officers that he was serving with, they all get killed on the bow section as the bow section slips away into this ferocious surf. And he becomes the de facto captain to these ordinary seamen that are looking for guidance and looking for hope when the waves are 60 feet high and there's no hope of survival.
Wow. I'm guessing you probably have screened the movie, and how do you think the graphics came out in terms of really expressing that day?
You know, I mean, I've seen, you know, the graphics, and I've seen the waves, and I've seen the ship breaking in two, and it's just amazing to visualize it, because that's how I visualized it in my head when I wrote those scenes, because we only had black and white photographs to really go off of, and the firsthand accounts of the survivors and the heroes.
Wow.
But to close my eyes and to visualize it, it's exactly the way I thought it was, and it's actually more intense than I could ever imagined.
So what happens? Is there a red carpet event that's going to take place somewhere on the South Shore in the Boston area?
Yeah, there are so many things that are kind of in the works right now. We've got obviously a premiere in Hollywood that's on January 25th, and then I'll be flying back here for several different screenings in Boston, hopefully on the South Shore, definitely on Cape Cod where the story unfolds. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's a great tribute and a Valentine to an area that I grew up in an area that we all live by the sea. We all know the sea. We understand the bounty that the sea provides. We also must understand the debt that the sea collects, and that's what this story is. But it's an uplifting film because it's a happy ending, folks. I'm not giving away the ending. It's a happy ending. Go read the book before you get before you go see the movie. I think you'll be impressed with both.
What has been the quintessential experience that you've had to date in regards leading up to where we are right now? Was it seeing the first trailer?
Oh, yeah.
Was it seeing the billboards?
Every moment is like my birthday, honestly. It's
your
like kids Christmas
seeing
morning.
It go, Dad!
Oh, yeah. It's to be seeing the trailer in a theater, and to think back of the first day I started to write The Finest Hours, I saw a film that night, and I'm sitting there, and I'm watching that film, and I'm watching those trailers, and I said to myself, I'm going to get my movie made. I hadn't even written the book yet. I said, but The Finest Hours is going to be a great book. It's going to be a movie, and I just have to get it done.
Now, are there, and maybe this is a dumb question, but are there the survivors?
There are no dumb questions.
Are the survivors alive now that were on that boat, and are they going to?
Yeah, you know, that's actually a great question. When we first started to research the book, three of the four heroes on that little lifeboat that saved all those men, they were alive. Today, only one has survived,
wow,
and he is going to go to the red carpet premiere in Hollywood.
Cool. That's cool.
And it's just, you know, Disney flew him to the set at the Four River Shipyard in Quincy last fall when we were filming, and it was one of the most emotional, you know, moments in anybody's life that's been connected to this story, to see him or to, you know, hear about his journey there, to see the boat again, to see the Coast Guard station that was replicated inside this huge hangar. You know, he was reliving it, and it's just been an amazing experience to watch it through his eyes.
Anything that you got in the works that you haven't shared
yet?
Sure.
Yeah, actually, I'm working on a crime program for a network that I haven't discussed yet, and it's going to be called Skeleton Key. And it's basically, because of my true crime background, the theory is that I would be traveling the country and helping families and helping law enforcement work on cold cases and uncover new evidence to old crimes. And there are a lot of stories locally that I've really got my fingers in right now. The Patrick McCarthy case, for example. He was a Cape Cod boy who died mysteriously in the mountains of New Hampshire back in 2004. And his parents have always believed that it was not an accident, that it was murder, and I'd love to be able to provide some kind of closure for the Murray family if I can.
Well, we thank you very much for coming in and sharing all details of projects that you were working on, that you were involved with. And anything you want to say in closing to some of the folks who are out there?
I would just say, please, go see The Finest Hour. See it once, see it twice, see it three times if you can, because I think it's a great film, and I'm very proud of it. Buy the book. Buy the book. Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate it.
Read the book.
Yes.
You got plenty of time before the movie hits.
Makes for a great Christmas gift.
Absolutely. Again, we've been speaking with Casey Sherman. He has been our guest. We thank you so much for joining us, and we're looking forward to hearing more, because again, as you walked in the door, you said, my God, what haven't you worked on? Next I'm going to hear that you're in the works of shooting your own movie.
Well, you know what, that'll be my next visit,
the next adventure.
I have something else in the works that I'm not ready to talk about, but in a few months we'll be back.
All right, well, hey, that's all the Monday Night Talk that we have. Until next time, 6:15 next week, we'll talk to you then. Have a great evening.
Night.
Bye. Bye.